This morning, for just a little while, I'd like to turn your attention to one of the most well-known parables that the Lord taught. It's found in Matthew chapter 25, and it is a parable about being prepared when the Lord comes again. He has just finished talking about the parable of the 10 virgins, and he teaches there that we should watch and be careful of our lives in his absence. He moves then to the parable that we have in mind about the faithful and unfaithful steward. In this parable, we find that there are several things that we need to point out as particulars if we're going to understand it. First of all, the Lord depicts himself as the man that is going into a far country, and he calls his faithful servants to him, and he delivers his goods into their care. Now, whenever we stop and look at this, we need to realize that the chore that he's given them is not a chore that he expects them to do voluntarily. It's not something that they are doing because they don't expect any reward. In fact, they are his servants, and they have been purchased, and they are in his servitude, and therefore he has every right to assign them tasks and every right to expect a return for his investment. But we find whenever the good master comes back that he finds that there are two of his servants that have done what he would have them to do. In fact, we find that the one that has been given 5 talents has turned around and made 5 additional with that. And we hear that the Lord, with a look into the eternal judgment and the eternal soul salvation of man, mankind, pronounces to that man, thou good and faithful servant, enter into the joys of thy Lord. We find the man that's been given 2 talents also pleases his Lord by acquiring 2 more. And then as a view into eternity and the day of judgment, here we find the good master also tells him, good and faithful servant, enter into the joys of thy Lord. But then we find the servant that is in our view this morning, and the reason I think that the Lord taught this lesson. This is the man that was given 1 talent. And whenever he was given 1 talent, he was afraid to do anything with it. In fact, he went and hid it in the dirt. And whenever the Lord comes back, he goes and gets that talent, and he brings it to him, and he says, I knew that you were a hard man. I knew that you'd be hard to please. You demand things from your servants. Therefore, I took this talent that you gave me, and I dug and hid it into the earth. Behold, here is thine. And so we find that on this occasion, the Lord doesn't just show disappointment. He doesn't just begin to tell this servant, you misunderstood what I had in mind for you to do. But the Bible teaches us very plainly, Jesus being the speaker, that the Lord is so upset with this man that he condemns him, and that he there on this occasion calls him a wicked and slothful servant. You know, whenever we stop and look at this and we see the vision of, again toward judgment that the Lord points us, he tells the servants there, take this man, bind him hand and foot, cast him into outer darkness, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You know, this is an important lesson that you and I need to learn, but it's one that we seem very slow to grasp in our life. In fact, if we were to think about most all of the sermons that have been taught from this pulpit during this meeting, they all encompass this parable. They all try to teach in one way or another this lesson that we are so slow to grasp in our life. Edmund Burke once said, all that is required for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. And that's exactly what the Lord is talking about here on this occasion. But you see, we miss the mark sometimes, because in this endless battle between good and evil, we seem to get it in our mind that the battle goes to those with the greatest numbers, the greatest resources, those that have the most talent in worldly affairs, where that's not the case at all. You know, we find, in fact, that when we begin to look at the Bible, when we begin to look at God's history of mankind, that the victory goes to those that do God's will. We find then that this is something that's important for us to do, and to always be up and about the Lord's business. In Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10, the Apostle Paul reminds us of how important this is by telling us that we are God's workmanship, created by Christ Jesus unto good works which God hath ordained us to do. Living the Christian life then is not just about taking care of our own wants and our own needs, but it's about being up and against the Lord's, up and against sin and evil, working in the Lord's service. You know, whenever we stop and think about that, certainly is something that oftentimes in life we fall into the same category as this unprofitable servant. We make the same excuses, or maybe even worse than he does. This servant could have said, Lord, I didn't have time to do your bidding, and I was so busy trying to get my career in shape. You should have waited a little longer, Lord. I was planning on doing something later on. Lord, you know, it's awful hard raising children today, and I had to spend a lot of time providing recreation for them, and I had to carry them to a lot of places that kept me out of your service. It's really your fault, Lord. You should have given me just a little more time. And the excuses go on and on and on, on. But you know, whenever we stop and think about that, certainly we see that the Lord did not take this man's excuse, and he won't accept our excuse either. Why? Because we're his servants, and because we are indebted unto him. He purchased us with his own precious blood, and he demands a return for his investment in us if we are indeed going to be profitable servants. But too often we find that individual Christians today are too much like this unprofitable servant. They put off doing the Lord's bidding. They look for a better time, a better opportunity, whenever things will be easier. And then once again we find that whenever good men fail to do good, then nothing gets done. You know, this can bleed over and affect entire congregations. In fact, we find that in Revelation chapter 3 and verse 1, Jesus speaks of such a congregation whenever he addresses the congregation in Sardis. He says, I know your works, and I know your reputation. I know that you have a good name for doing good works, but I also know that you are dead. Now, what is he talking about? Well, here is a congregation that had once been very active in the service, had once been very involved in sending out evangelists, in teaching and preaching the gospel all over the area. They had been very involved in standing for the truth. But as time has gone on, they have ceased to do that. Now they are living, as it were, on their laurels and on their reputation. And so whenever Jesus stops and examines that, he just simply tells them, you are dead, and I know your works. You know, whenever we stop and think about that, certainly we can think about what a terror it would be in this world today if the church were to die and if we were to cease to do good works. Well, you know, whenever we stop and think about the great catastrophe that we deal with, whenever we stop and look at the prevalence of evil in the world today, I want you to know something that you may find to be a surprise. Whenever we stop and think about the world that we live in, and even these United States, the majority of the people are not criminals. The majority of the people are not sexual deviants. The majority of the people are not those that defraud folks of their retirement funds or that are evil and murderers. No, those are not the majority of the people. In fact, we find that the majority of the people in this world today, and the majority of the people in our country, are good, wholesome people. In fact, whenever I have the opportunity to stand before this audience this morning, I know that I stand before the greatest people in the world. I know that I stand before the people that have the greatest influence on this world today. And I know that whenever I stop and address you and address those that I love, that certainly I address the hope of the world today. The problem is that sometimes evil prevails because good men do nothing. You know, there are several consequences to that. Whenever evil prevails because good men have done nothing, oftentimes we seem to get the idea that if we don't get involved in terrible sins, we don't get involved in things that others would notice and condemn the church over, that everything is all right with us and that we really don't have to do anything about that. But that's simply not the case at all. In fact, the Apostle Paul taught throughout all of his ministry the necessity and the importance of doing good work, of standing up for the truth and standing up for what was right, even at times whenever it's hard and even at times whenever it may be awkward to us. And the reason for that is because we give an account for this life and we have to answer for those things that we've done or failed to do in God's service. You know, it's always been that way. In fact, in Ezekiel chapter 3 and verse 18, there the prophet Ezekiel says, speaking on God's behalf, when I say unto the wicked, thou shalt surely die, and thou givest him not warning, nor speakest to warn the wicked from his wicked ways to save his life, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thine hands. It's important then that you and I be up and about the Lord's business, doing those things which we ought to do. For the time is short and the opportunities few, and the time that you and I have in this life are most important. But you know, there's another thing that I notice that takes place whenever good men do nothing, and that is whenever good men do nothing, we find that not only does evil prevail, but we find that whenever good men do nothing, they're no longer considered good men. I want you to notice that whenever the Lord gave this money, gave these talents unto his servant, that here he had called those that he could trust. Out of all of his servants, he calls these three men, and he entrusts them with his goods, and he expects to get a return from that. But in the end, we find that the Lord doesn't feel that way about this man. in the end, the Lord looks at this man, and because of his lack of service, because of his lack of doing what he needed to do, he calls him a wicked and a slothful servant. You know, we find then that God expects some things out of us, and if we don't do those things, even though we may not be directly involved in terrible sins, we may not be directly involved in some of the things that we notice and despise in this world that we live in, we'll no longer be considered in God's sight to be good servants. We'll no longer be considered in God's sight to be righteous men, because in this business that we're involved in, he certainly expects return from his labors. In Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 24, the author says, "Let us consider one another to provoke one another into good works." We do that because we recognize the responsibility that we have toward God. We recognize the responsibility that we have toward each other. We recognize that God demands us to be up and about his business in everything that we say and do, to use our life in such a way to influence others and to further the cause of Christ. Failing to do that carries a catastrophic consequence. James says in James chapter 4, verse 17, "Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." This teaches us then that we have some things in our life that certainly need to be done and taken care of. There's a great example of that found in Genesis chapter 37, verse 29. In that story, in that part of history, you'll remember that Joseph had gone down at his father's request to check on his brothers. Now, Joseph had fallen out of favor with his brethren because he oftentimes spoke when he would have been better off listening. Sometimes he said things that offended them. And so whenever they saw him from afar off, they made up their mind, "There he is. There's our brother. We're going to get rid of him. We're going to fix him up this time." And so whenever he comes into their view and comes into the camp, before he really has an opportunity to say much, they grab him up and throw him in a hole in the ground. And there they intend to kill him. But you know, as they begin to think about and discuss what they're going to do, Reuben, the oldest brother, realized that maybe they were just acting a little rash. Maybe it was just because of their anger. And he decided that he would wait. He wouldn't say anything now. But when things calmed down some, whenever the opportunity was right, whenever things were easier, that he would talk to his brethren, and they would get young Joseph up out of the well that they had cast him into, and then they would be able to reconcile things and all would be okay. You see, the problem is that while Reuben was out and away from the group, there was a group of slave traders that came by, and seeing their opportunity, his other brothers pulled up Joseph out of the well and they sold him into slavery. And whenever Reuben came back and was going to go through all of the great things that he had in mind to do to make everything okay and to make everything right, he didn't have the opportunity anymore. And now we find that even though he wanted to do different at one time, he is just as guilty as his brethren. And in fact, that is a burden that they carried all of their lives. And if you read the entire documentary about the story of Joseph and how that he became the Pharaoh's greatest asset and the ruler of Egypt in all of their material means, you'll find that whenever he finally was reintroduced to his brothers, that was still on their mind. You know, the Lord teaches over and over parables and lessons and gives us examples of how important, yea, how essential it is that we up and about the Lord's business, that we be doing good works. And they even go so far as to name some of those good works. He says, "Husbands, love your wives with all of your heart, even as your own selves. Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is good. If you're an employer, be good to your employees. If you're an employee, be a good employee for those that you work for. Treat everyone honestly and fairly, that you treat those that are outside of the body of Christ honestly and fairly." And I'll tell you one place that we could really start, and it's something that has been on my mind for a long time now, and that would be we could start by supporting our preachers better. Now, I'm better in a position to say that now because I don't depend on that, but I want you to know, if you stop and look around, it's something that's greatly needed. Whenever I was a younger man, I used to wonder why the preachers that came to hold meetings at our congregations always seemed to be driving old vehicles. I wondered why it was that they oftentimes had something to sell, whether it be pocket knives or church books or whether it be some other thing that people might find attractive. I always had to be selling something. I didn't understand that. They're just trying to eat. They're just trying to feed their family. Now, they don't do that so much anymore, but we have put them back to work, haven't we? You know, there are a lot of brethren today that need to be in the field full time. They're having to work a secular job. Now, there's nothing wrong with working a secular job. In fact, most of us have done that all of our lives. But we ought to think along the line of doing some good works and helping in this great endeavor to preach and teach the gospel. Support those more fully who have that talent that God gave them so that we can share in the reward, because the Lord is coming back. He's going to require that which he's invested in us and a great return besides. Thank you.